Hi, and welcome to NASIO Voices, where we talk all things state IT. I'm Amy Glasscock at our headquarters in Lexington, Kentucky.
And I'm Matt Pincus here in Washington, D.C.
Today on NASIO Voices, we'll hear from our very own Director of Government Affairs and my co-host, Matt Pincus, on NASIO's 2020 Federal Advocacy Priorities and Congressional Outlook for the year. Later, we'll also discuss some of the governor's top legislative initiatives and priorities with Mary Catherine Ott from the National Governors Association. So, Matt, let's talk about NASIO's federal advocacy priorities. What are they? Why does NASIO have them?
Sure. And we're flipping the script a little bit. So I think NASIO's federal advocacy priorities, which we release on an annual basis, are sort of a collection of initiatives or ideas that serve as sort of a best practices for the state CIOs. The advocacy priorities are sort of issues or pain points that have pretty much commonality across all the states and the territories. And so these may be issues that CIOs and CISOs are dealing with themselves in their own states. But having a representative here in DC means that I can advocate on their behalf with Congress, the White House, and the various federal agencies. These are probably ringing true in every single state and territory in the country.
So let's talk a little bit about this year's priorities. Let's start with harmonization of federal cybersecurity regulations. This is an issue that's been a top priority for several years for NASIO and the state CIOs.
It certainly has. Essentially, the way I describe this is state governments partner with the federal government to administer federal programs and deliver services to citizens. But because of this partnership, state governments must store data and exchange data with federal programmatic agencies, and thus they are then subject to federal security regulations that govern the use and the protection of that shared data. And so, as state CIOs are no longer siloed, meaning that they now have purview over pretty much every single agency within their state, they now have to abide by all these different federal regulations. These federal security regulations largely address the same controls and outcomes, but differ in their specific requirements. So basically, the CIOs have to comply with dozens of these regulations when they're all addressing pretty much the same thing. And the problem with this is these disparate regulations are really an obstacle for state CIOs who are trying to get the most bang for their buck for the taxpayer, right? They're trying to find savings for taxpayers through, you know, various IT initiatives. We talk about consolidation and optimization. Not only that, then you have the audit process. And so when state data centers are audited, we've had numerous examples where the auditors for the same regulations have found different findings, and that's very confusing. And so that then requires state CIOs to dedicate additional time and resources on these redundancies rather than enhancing their cybersecurity posture in their state. And so in 2018, the United States Senate Homeland Security Committee, along with the House of Representatives Committee on Oversight and Governmental Reform, tasked the Government Accountability Office, that's GAO, to study the various federal cybersecurity regulations and make a series of recommendations. And right now, they are in the process of finalizing their report, which we're hoping to get in the next couple of months. And then our goal is going to be to work with Congress to help mandate the implementation of those findings.
Great. I'm glad to see that there's some movement on that, at least. It's a huge burden for the states. Okay, so let's talk about something that's new this year, advocating for dedicated cybersecurity funding for state and local governments.
Yes. So I would say it's a new issue in terms of it being on the NASIO federal advocacy priorities. And so to expand on that a little bit, nearly half of all the states do not have dedicated cybersecurity funding. And so most state cybersecurity budgets, the ones that do provide for it, it's only between 0 to 3% of their overall IT budget, compared with an average of more than 10% in the private sector. The real crux of this is that we know state CIOs are continuing to be asked to take on an increasingly complex cybersecurity threat environment, and without that requisite funding. as CIOs are tasked with these additional responsibilities, including providing cybersecurity assistance to local governments and other agencies within the state, they are being asked to do so with shortages in both funding and cyber talent. NASIO has been encouraging state governments to establish dedicated budget items for cybersecurity as sort of an overall subset of their technology budget. And I think that this would be certainly important just to convey just a shift in mindset that states do understand the threat of ransomware and other cyber attacks that can certainly change how states function, right? It's the continuity of government. And then at the federal level here, because we are talking about federal advocacy priorities, cybersecurity spending within existing federal grant programs, and the primary one that I'll give as an example is the Homeland Security Grant Program. And so one of the problems that we have is that less than 4% of all Homeland Security Grant Program funding has been allocated to cybersecurity over the last decade. And so there's some legislation out there that NASIO has endorsed, the State and Local Government Cybersecurity Act and the State Cyber Resiliency Act, to provide dedicated cyber funding to state and local governments. We're really advocating for the passage of this legislation to create these additional resources that state and local governments have access to be able to provide and protect citizens.
So the other new item this year is advocating for the widespread adoption of .gov. Is there a congressional effort behind this priority too, like the cyber funding issue? And also, what does that mean?
There is a legislative initiative behind it. We know that every single state is on the .gov domain. However, it's the local governments that are not. And the reason that that is so concerning is because of the security laws, and not being on a secure domain like .gov can result in spoofing attacks, which definitely happen. And so as of today, there are only about 4,500 .gov domains registered to local governments, and that represents about 5% of all eligible entities. There are some barriers for entry. The General Services Administration runs the .gov program currently. They charge an annual fee of $400 for .gov. So if you are a small local government, it's a hard sell for this IT manager to say, we're going to spend $400 on a .gov registration when we could go to GoDaddy and spend $20 a year. The problem with that is, purely from a cybersecurity standpoint, the registration of .gov requires thorough vetting and background checks, which does prevent spoofing, as I mentioned. And so there are a lot of benefits that .gov provides, that it is authoritative and secure. And I think from a citizen perspective, you know that when you go to a .gov site, it is legitimate. Mm-hmm. And so there is legislation that was introduced this past fall, the .gov Act of 2019. It would expand the adoption of the .gov domain and would also switch the program over from General Services Administration to the Department of Homeland Security's Cybersecurity Infrastructure Security Agency. And then it would require DHS to come out with an outreach strategy to support the migration to .gov, and then also allow the use of Homeland Security grant funds as an allowable expense for the adoption of .gov, right? So that would be working towards eliminating that $400 registration fee, which I mentioned is a huge barrier. So we're hopeful that that's going to progress. And this is something that we are pretty optimistic about.
Great. Okay, so the final priority is something that was on the list last year, and that is recognizing state authority and ongoing innovation with emerging technology. Can you briefly touch on that?
Sure. The advocacy priority on that is really that states and the application of emerging technology within state government is one example of really how states serve as a laboratory for democracy and often lead to introduce innovative solutions in the public sector. We just want to highlight some of the great things that states are doing at the federal level. We are always going to be supportive of the ability and the authority of state governments to continue to serve as those laboratories of innovation as applies to emerging technology.
That's great. Okay, so thank you for that overview of the advocacy priorities.
You are quite welcome.
And those are coming out this week. They're out. What's the date on this?
They are out as of today.
Okay, great.
And they are available on our website.
Perfect. And we'll put a link in our show notes for that.
Perfect.
Okay, so What else is going on in DC right now? From a congressional perspective, how do you see the year shaping up? I know when I worked on the Hill, an election year, things kind of would grind to a halt toward the end of the year. I mean, this is kind of a big election year. There's an impeachment trial going on. So
this is not, this is not your, this is not your father's election cycle, apparently. Right. So I think that what we're seeing is hyper-partisanship ramping up, right? The impeachment trial is beginning in the Senate. And it seems like every single election cycle, the campaigning and the electioneering seems to start earlier and earlier, which means that we will likely have a shortened period of activity by Congress this year leading up to the elections in November. I don't think that that needs to be sort of a doom and gloom scenario. Because there is elections that are coming up, a lot of members would like to get wins and be able to campaign on legislative victories. I think that the ability for Congress to work on comprehensive cybersecurity legislation to benefit state and local governments is certainly going to be something that we're going to continue to see. And then the other thing I think you'll see is a lot of legislation being introduced, and whether or not it's passed on election security remains to be seen. And I think that what we're going to see from now until probably early to mid spring is a legislative sprint to whether we get a budget passed for next year or hearings and legislation introduced to try and take the bacon home, as you will, for legislators to campaign on. But obviously, impeachment is certainly in the background of everything, and whether or not that grinds the Senate to a complete halt, we're not sure. But as of right now, I think the House of Representatives is trying to work on this cybersecurity for state and local governments through some various grant programs. I mean, so we're seeing the churn of legislation. Just how long that lasts, I think, is probably the biggest question.
Yeah, for sure. Well, it sounds like there's some good news in there, and what will be a very interesting year, I'm sure.
For sure.
Yeah. Well, thanks for talking with us about that today.
I am happy to do it, Amy. And I got to say, it's a little bit strange going from co-host to guest back to co-host, but anything for the sake of NASIO Voices. And with that, let's bring on our featured guest on today's episode. Mary Catherine Ott is the Legislative Director for Homeland Security and Public Safety at the National Governors Association. She's also the lead staffer for the Council of Governors. And as many of you know, NASIO has a long-standing strategic partnership with NGA. And it is certainly not a coincidence that my office here in DC is in the same building as NGA.
Mary Catherine, welcome to NASIO Voices. Thanks for coming on to chat with us today.
Thanks for having me.
So before we dive into some of our questions, as usual, we would like for you to tell us a little bit about yourself and your background.
Sure, happy to. So I hail from the great state of Missouri, born and raised in St. Louis, and then went out and came to college on the East Coast. And after that, I came down to D.C., worked on the Hill for a couple of years, really focusing a little bit more on international relations and the like, and on the Hill, kind of defense issues and international relations, cybersecurity all come together, and kind of got a interest in defense issues. And as part of that, I moved over to the National Guard Association to lobby for the National Guard. Then I moved over to the Pentagon to work with the chief of the National Guard Bureau on legislative matters. And then about 3 years ago, I came over here to NGA and really opened up the portfolio a little bit more beyond just defense issues, looped in cybersecurity again, homeland security issues, disaster, public safety, and the like. So kind of been a fun little go around in DC, but really enjoy doing all these issues on behalf of states.
For sure. That's awesome. So from kind of a 10,000 foot view, what would you say is the function of NGA and what's exactly your role?
So NGA really represents the collective voice of all of the nation's governors, to include states and territories. We have kind of two parts of the NGA. My side, which is government relations, we basically handle all of the issues du jour. Governors care about pretty much every issue there is in the federal government. So we have five different committees, and I oversee the Homeland Security and Public Safety Committee, and I really go forward and advocate on behalf of governors' priorities in that space. And then we have our Center for Best Practices side that really looks at what states are doing in their portfolio issues and really recommending back and forth to policy advisors of here are some best practices that states have undertaken and might be applicable to your situation. And a lot of times there's a little synchronization between our government relations team and our Center for Best Practices, and where we can leverage those best practices to tell a great news story to the Hill, we really capitalize on. And I know NASIO has been a great partner with us, both on the government relations side, as well as our Center for Best Practices, showcasing all of the great work that's being done in cybersecurity in the states. So really, I am kind of the point person there to articulate all that to the administration and Congress.
Great. So, Mary Catherine, our last episode of NASIO Voices, we heard from Todd Kimbriel and Nancy Reinosek, the CIO and the CISO from the Great Republic of Texas, about their ransomware attacks this past August. And so they praised Governor Abbott for his role in helping to coordinate a real rapid response to the attacks. And so from a governor's perspective, can you talk about some of the efforts governors are taking to ensure that a term that many of our listeners like, cyber hygiene and resilience, is a top priority for their states?
Sure. I'll start first kind of collectively, and really, obviously, the ransomware attacks across the country have really been very in the news, interest in from Congress, from governor's offices, from their Homeland Security advisors, obviously CISOs and CIOs. And really, I just wanted to showcase a little bit that back in October, in partnership with NASIO and a bunch of the state and local associations, we held a briefing on the Hill for the state and local cybersecurity, and really brought in policy advisors, Homeland Security advisors. Doug Robinson spoke on behalf of NASIO. We had DC's resiliency office here talking about it and just educating the Hill in terms of what the challenges are for states, what states are doing to respond to specifically ransomware attacks, and kind of what sort of needs are required. So from a governor perspective, I'll really showcase, as kind of required, our chair of our National Governors Association, Governor Hogan from Maryland. He currently has his chair's initiative, which is Infrastructure Foundation for Success. And as part of that, he's been doing regional workshops and stakeholder summits to focus on various sectors within infrastructure. And so also back in October, he hosted a stakeholder engagement in Detroit to really focus in on how are you securing your critical infrastructure from a cybersecurity space. So we had a couple of governors, Governor Whitmer from Michigan, as well as Governor Lee from Tennessee there, having a panel discussion and really talking about how do you ensure, one, from a hygiene perspective, that individuals and businesses and state government understand how critically important it is to keep an eye out for those fishy emails. So really kind of sharing that of it really starts at the individual level. And then at the macro level, how do you institute really good policy and strategy to be able to be prepared for any sort of attack? And understanding that a cyber attack or any sort of a non-resilient structure in any sector is going to impact one another. It's a domino effect. So it was great to really see governors on this larger stage talking to both private sector and public sector about how important it is to really carry that message and do planning far in advance. Another good example, really on the ground, Governor John Bel Edwards of Louisiana. He is one of the chairs of our Cyber Resource Center here at NGA, and he established a Louisiana Cybersecurity Commission through an executive order to really address a range of cyber threats in the state. And so since 2016, the commission has really been working to look at cybersecurity from an emergency support function and a response to all of that. So it's really good to see a governor issuing an executive order showing how important this is, and then bringing stakeholders in the states together to figure out how to integrate your cyber response into a larger emergency management framework.
You know, we hear time and time again from state CIOs and state CISOs who are trying to change the mindset within their own states to look at cyber and to approach cyber as they would a natural disaster, be it a hurricane or flood. And, you know, one of those challenges is cyber attacks or ransomware attacks, you can't see them. So along those same lines, our 2018 cybersecurity report found that only about half of the states are budgeting dedicated line items for cybersecurity. Have you seen examples of governors actively trying to improve how states are budgeting for cyber?
Yeah, I'll take a moment to highlight that the NGA and NASIO released our Stronger Together State and Local Cybersecurity Collaboration Report, which showcases a bunch of states and what they're doing in that space. So for listeners out there, I think it's published on both of our websites that you're happy to kind of look at and see what's great work is being done in the states. And I'll do kind of one highlight of that. Illinois Governor Pritzker and the state of Illinois, as it transitioned, has established their cyber navigation program. And they're really looking at their Department of Innovation Technology and their State Board of Elections and using Help America Vote Act or HAVA funds to really fund dedicated people to come out and support local election officials to improve their cybersecurity posture. One of the big issues after 2016 really indicated kind of more work that needed to be done in that in the election system space, and kind of looking at where federal funds are to incorporate that into state planning and building a resilient election infrastructure. So that's one really good program that a lot of people have pointed to as somewhere to really start. I think the biggest challenge, and I know I've talked to your members before about this, is there is no federal dedicated funding for cybersecurity, which is a big push that both of our associations are really looking to. If you're not seeing a prioritization from the federal government to help support states, I can assume and imagine that it's very difficult for a CISO, CIO, or even a Homeland Security Advisor to actually articulate to the governor's office and to the legislature of how important it is to invest in something that you don't really see tangibly. So kind of indicate of, oh, there's frustrations of how do you really get funding from your governor's budget or articulate it to your legislature if you can't say, well, I have some federal funds matching to it. So if you're relying upon FEMA grant funding, that's really going to be focused on those kinetic standard threats, be it physical attacks or disasters, that's much easier to kind of articulate and illustrate. But in the cyberspace, it's a little bit more difficult to show what that return on investment is. And we definitely see that at the federal level, trying to say how important it is to establish good dedicated funding for state and localities is critical to helping people and helping states build strategies that can be implemented at the grassroots level, because it's hard to illustrate that return on investment than congressional staff and congressional members really need in order for them to justify creating new funds. So that's kind of what we're seeing right now.
Okay. Can you talk a little bit about some of the top issues that you're working on this year on behalf of the governors?
Sure, happy to. So as I mentioned earlier, I handle all things Homeland Security and public safety. And so cybersecurity is one of those critical areas, at least that governors are constantly talking about. So in that space, the biggest push that we're going to look to do this year, and it's a continuation of last year, is really what I mentioned already, that dedicated funding for states for cybersecurity efforts. And we have seen some efforts kind of moving forward on that across the board from state and localities. That is really a big top priority. So we're going to continue to push for that. And then really kind of continuing to push for an increased funding for all disasters at the end of the day. The federal budget's really kind of been stagnant in that space. And with more challenges, more threats, increased severity of disasters, really want to see more funding in that arena specifically. So those are two really big issues that probably have a little bit of interest for this group. But since, as I said earlier, governors care about everything, we're still kind of working on what our definitive priorities for an association will be. But dedicated funding for cyber is definitely top on the list.
Okay, for sure. Is there any specific federal legislation that you guys are working on or actively monitoring right now?
Yeah, so we last year, in along with NASIO, supported the State Cyber Resiliency Act that was introduced in both the state, the Senate, and the House. So we really are supportive of legislation right now that, as I said, our top priority authorizes dedicated grant funding. Another piece of legislation is the State and Local Government Cybersecurity Act of 2019. Both of those bills that I just mentioned do dedicated cyber funding for states and localities. They just kind of approach it a little bit differently. One is through FEMA funds and FEMA management, and one is through the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency within DHS or CISA that would administer those funds. And then we've really kind of worked in partnership with Matt over there at NASIO, talking to both committees of jurisdictions. We've seen a lot of members who are very interested in helping to support state and localities with their cyber posture. So I anticipate we're going to start seeing some more legislation out of those committees that we likely would be supportive of. I will preface that NGA very rarely ever endorses legislation. It's, as you can imagine, sometimes hard to get consensus definitively on certain issues. So yes, Having us on record, at least for the State Cyber Resiliency Act, is really a big push and really shows the importance of how states need that dedicated funding.
Definitely. So finally, Mary Catherine, we like to do something we call the lightning round.
And oh, excellent.
So I'm going to ask you a few rapid fire questions. Are you ready?
I am ready.
Great. So for those who know you, you are an avid world traveler. Where is your next trip?
Good question. So a fun fact, I have a friend from high school who past few years, we've gone in May over Memorial Day on a trip somewhere fun. And so that's probably the next trip time coming up. However, we haven't decided where we're going. I think I'm kind of leaning towards Portugal. So that I think might be the next trip, but not sure yet.
Next question. Do you have any pets?
Well, since Matt and I have known each other for several years, he knows the answer to this question. So, yes, I do. And I will say Matt and his wife in the past have watched my lovely pet. So I have one dog. His name's Louie. He is an 8-year-old rat terrier who is just a very good dog.
And finally, the last question in our lightning round, what are you watching on TV?
I got on the bandwagon and over the holidays watched The Witcher, which I thoroughly enjoyed and will admit that I am currently reading the books now because it was very interesting. And then at least a show that now I haven't yet finished but really enjoy is Killing Eve. So I'm watching season 2 of that right now.
All right. Well, Mary Catherine, thank you so much for taking the time to join us
Absolutely.
On NASIO Voices today. And we very much appreciate it. And we hope to catch up with you again soon.
Great. Thank you for having me. It's been great.
Thanks for listening to NASIO Voices. If you'd like to read our new joint publication with the National Governors Association, it's called Stronger Together, State and Local Cybersecurity Collaboration. You can find it on NASIO's website or NGA's website. We'll also put a link in the show notes.
Stay tuned for our next episode. And remember, cyber hygiene is important as body hygiene.
Don't forget to subscribe. And thanks to everyone who's already done so.